Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right Now Weekly Radio Show, hosted by Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Publishing, home of best-selling books, award-winning magazines, global broadcasts and communities. Right Now is a highly educational, inspiring, and empowering show focused on writing, publishing, and marketing your books, featuring outstanding guests from across the globe, including best-selling authors, world stage speakers, thought leaders, and visionaries with proven strategies, secret formulas, and treasured resources to help you succeed and make an impact. Welcome, sit back, and enjoy the show. And now your host, Vicki Winterton.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, and I'm thrilled today because with us we have Munch Murray. Munch is a mystic, spiritual master, and mantra yogi who has traveled the world to learn his sacred spiritual arts. With multiple spiritual books and founder of the Spiritualized Psychotherapy Center in London, Munch is highly proactive about helping others realize the importance of a spiritual life. His latest bestseller is You Are the Light. Munch, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about how you came to your passion and purpose, because you are so interesting. Your history is so interesting.
Oh, well, it was like a bolt out of the blue from the cosmos for me. I previously thought I would become a famous surrealist painter like Salvador Dali, with whom I was friendly because I lived near his house at Cadaqués on the Spanish coast. And he allowed me to sit in his studio and watch how he painted. So I was getting the technique, and I was already gaining a reputation as a surrealist artist in England. However, it seems the universe decided I had another destiny. What happened was, in my early 20s, I set off to hitchhike around the world. And by the time I got as far as Israel, I'd run out of money. So I stayed there for a year, and at first working on a kibbutz, and then on a ship on the Red Sea, then drilling for copper in King Solomon's mines in the desert. Not at all romantic, I assure you. Then training elephants in Tel Aviv Zoo, working as a scenic artist in the National Theatre, and finally singing in a nightclub. But when another nightclub owner offered me a job with more money, my boss told the authorities that I'd overstayed my permit. So to avoid being arrested, I had to get out of the country quickly. And so I bought a ticket on a boat to the island of Cyprus out in the Mediterranean. But before boarding, I had my bag with all my money stolen, so I arrived in Cyprus with only £7.10 in my pocket. And there I was at a crossroads in my life. I had no idea where to go from there or what to do. So one evening, I was sitting on a bollard on the quayside in the port of Limassol, watching the sun go down over the sea, when something extraordinary happened to me. I suddenly had this weird feeling that a ghostly hand was creeping up the back of my neck and over my head and placing an etheric brain on top of mine. I had no idea of the word etheric at that time, nor had I studied any spiritual books or yoga books, and I'd never taken any drugs. This was a completely natural occurrence. But in seconds, it seems that my consciousness expanded outwards in every direction, across the land, across the ocean, and out into space, until it became the consciousness of the universe itself. And during that timeless experience, I was given to understand so many things about the nature of existence, things that even quantum physics scientists are only just beginning to realize today, over 50 years later. So that event changed the whole course of my life. I was suddenly on what's called a spiritual path with no idea how it happened. Anyway, with only £7 to my name, I needed to find work. So I thought the only possibility might be down in Kenya, as it was a British colony at the time. That was halfway down Africa. Anyway, I could only afford a boat ticket to Alexandria in Egypt. And somehow I got myself to Cairo, wangled myself into a job as art director for Egyptian television, and I worked there for the next 6 months. During that time, I often went to the British Library there, and I discovered a book called Cosmic Consciousness by Dr. Maurice Buck, which explained exactly what had happened to me. So then my intellect, which had been totally bypassed by the experience, was finally satisfied that I wasn't going bonkers. So ever since, my motivation has been to pass on this knowledge, which has been fermenting in my consciousness for the last 50 years or so, backed up by years of meditation and studying with masters of many traditions in many countries, just in order to deepen my experience. And I also spent 3 years as a mendicant monk, wandering all over India. However, I never realized the true depth of my motivation until I was invited as a delegate to a conference for peace in the Middle East through yoga. And at the end of this week-long program, the master of ceremonies was recounting his visit to give a speech at an old folks' home. And he said the talk he was about to give went out the window when an old lady in a wheelchair rolled down the aisle, looked up at him and asked piteously, like a little child, "Please, have you come to take me home?" He was devastated, and so was I when I heard it, because as he said that, I was overcome with a powerful rush of emotion. My throat choked, tears filled my eyes, and suddenly I recalled a scene at the age of 13 when my father had taken me to visit an orphanage. And while he talked business with the director, a little boy sidled up to me in the corridor, put his hand in mine and pleadingly asked, "Uncle, have you come to take me home?" At the time, I was stricken to the heart because I was powerless to do anything for this poor, lonely little boy. But his request had unknowingly burned deep into my soul. And at that moment, as the master of ceremonies spoke, it all came back to me. Suddenly, I saw and I felt the connections. I got up, my hands trembling. I took the microphone, and not caring that tears were streaming down my face, I shared my story with 600 people in the audience that I just made the astonishing discovery that ever since I dedicated the rest of my life to taking people home. And I feel that my latest book, You Are the Light, is one of the ways I'm helping to achieve that ambition.
Oh my gosh, Mons. I had warned the listeners that your story is so unbelievable, but it's really dramatic to hear you actually sharing it with us, really sharing it with us.
Yes, quite often I'm in tears when I share that.
Oh, it's just amazing. So tell us a little bit about how you got started writing. You have told us about so many things that have really made such an impact on your life and the lives of others. When did you start writing?
Well, I wrote my first book when I was about 8 years old, called Czar the Jaguar, and in an English exercise book. So I guess I had the soul of a writer even then. I remember I would make up facsimile books with all the metadata, just like real published books. I was very meticulous even then. And for the next 5 years, I wrote lots of short stories about toys coming alive at night when the children had gone to bed. And I also created dozens of my own comics, and I based the colorful characters on what was popular in the weekly comics that I bought. Then when I was about 13, I began a parody of Alice in Wonderland called Brian in Bewilderland. I didn't get very far with it, but some of the characters that Brian encountered, called Ifflepins, became the basis for my now published fantasy, Ifflepin Island, which took me all of 60 years to write.
My gosh, that's incredible. What a work. What a work and what a contribution once again. So what inspires you to create, to write, to get your message out to the world? Because I think it's so important for everyone to do, get their message out to the world.
Well, I feel that there seems to be an impulse of the universe that just pushes me to create. It's not so much inspiration, I think, as an inner drive. Even when I was hitchhiking all down Africa, whenever I had respite from my travels and working to survive, something urged me to carry on writing my children's fantasy as soon as I had some spare time. So I'm never so happy as when I'm creating, whether it's a painting, a book, an audio CD, or even a video to help my followers on Facebook to understand their lives.
That's wonderful, because you connect so closely, and obviously your life is an example of it, about how your creativity immediately connects to your contribution to the universe. Really, really lovely. So
thank
what
you.
Challenges have you faced with your writing?
Oh, I'd say mainly perfectionism. In my teens and 20s, I'd spend months just trying to get one line poetically perfect before going on to the next. And something I've thankfully managed to let go of over the years. But my biggest challenge was finding a plot to my fantasy. I wanted to write something in the nature of the Moomin books by Tove Jansson. I had lots of funny characters drawn, but I had no idea for a story. So I just started writing, making it as lyrical and poetic as I could to make up for not having a plot. But when I showed it to my friend, the philosopher Colin Wilson, author of way over 100 books, he said, "It's wonderfully written, but you've got no hook. There's no curiosity for anyone to want to read the next chapter." And he was right. So I had to insert a dodgy-looking character who was spying on the hero. I had no idea why. And that's how the book went along. I added some desperate situation to the hero at the end of every chapter, and then I had to spend months figuring out how to get him out of it. Finally, I figured out what the book was going to be about. That's what the author trade calls being a pantser. I write the story by the seat of my pants, not having any idea where it's going. I find that more exciting than plotting.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because self-editing and all of the things that go with a book have their challenges too, don't they?
Yeah, that's another challenge I have. It's really hard to delete passages you've spent time on, nicely crafting, only to realize that it slows up the story.
It's all part of it, though. It really is all part of it.
Absolutely.
So many people that listen to our show would be interested in hearing about your favorite tips.
Well, from what I said before, don't try to perfect your writing as you go along. Dash it all off, write like mad, and then put it away for a month or two. And then take it out again and realize what crap it is. And with a fresh insight, you can start to improve it from there. But I think my best advice for new authors is to forget about traditional publishing and the heartache of endless rejection slips. I had plenty. Publishers don't always know what the public wants. And I've learned to go for indie publishing instead. That is independent self-publishing through platforms like Amazon, Draft to Digital, Smashwords, or Ingram Spark, where you can get your book published for free and on sale in 2 days, rather than waiting up to 2 years when it's in the hands of a traditional publisher. Just make sure that it's professionally produced as possible regarding editing, proofreading, formatting, and an eye-catching cover, not something you've knocked up yourself if you're not a professional designer. And be aware that quite a few traditional publishers have made offers for self-published books when they've seen how well they're doing. And that saves you the huge hassle of finding an agent to take you on. And it also cuts out the middleman.
You know, those are such good points. And the reason I really encourage self-publishing is I love to see the authors keep control of their books. When you go the traditional publishing route, you lose control not only of the book that they may be publishing for you, but possibly part of their contract will require that you seek them out first and give them first option on your next books. And if it doesn't work out real well, it's really sad for the authors because writing takes so much energy and creativity and so forth, and you pour so much love into it that I really love to see the authors keep control of their books and the future of their books, which you have done so beautifully.
Yes, indeed. I'm having trouble getting my rights back from the last publisher who did me down.
Yeah, it can get complicated on every arena, including legally, that's for sure. So You Are the Light is just a wonderful book. What do you personally, as the author, hope people will take away from it? What do you hope the readers will take away from it?
Well, from the feedback I'm getting from You Are the Light, I'm finding that most of my readers, are usually those who've been on the spiritual quest for many years, often express a huge sigh of relief when they find my book, because it finally answers all their last questions in a clear and comprehensible way that they've not found answered anywhere else. So they're able to take away a new way of looking at themselves and the world and this dream of existence. And yoga students who've usually been weighed down with a cartload of practices to do every day are really happy to find simple practices towards enlightenment that don't even require meditation or take up any time in their busy day. If I may quote from a couple of reviews, one says, "This book blew my mind, and I'm truly grateful for it. I can honestly say that reading it has changed my life for the better." And a well-known London yoga teacher says, "You have put the last pieces of the jigsaw together. Now I can get on with my life without having to strive or think about it anymore. You have my profound thanks."
Oh, well, that speaks volumes, doesn't it? That's wonderful, really wonderful. What impact, if you were kind of looking at your teachings and your books, especially your latest bestseller, if you were to look at it almost like a legacy and how it might impact the world, what would that look like to you?
Well, I'd like to have it have the same sort of impact that Eckhart Tolle is having. I've been called the Eckhart Tolle of Europe. So I'd like to help enlighten and awaken the consciousness of as many people in the world as possible. And that will help to create a more peaceful frequency in the mental atmosphere of the planet. The more people that have their doubts cleared and can grasp what life is really all about, the better it is for all of us.
Well, that is for sure. And I know that our listeners are going to want to connect with you and tap into more of your wisdom. Is there a way they can do that online?
Yes. Well, there's lots of ways. They can sign up for my very infrequent newsletter, I'm bad at that, on my website, www.musmurray.com, or they can check out my timeline on Facebook and my spiritual teachings on Ms. Murray's Inner Garden on the Facebook page, and just click on the follow button. And there are about 50 or more of my video satsangs on YouTube. And there will also be a documentary on my life and teachings coming out on Netflix in a series called Fractals, produced by a film company in Brazil who are interviewing other inspirational teachers like Byron Katie. So do look out for it, folks.
That is so wonderful. I know everyone will look out for it. Thank you for bringing your amazing, amazing experiences and wisdom to our time together today.
Oh, thank you for this interview, Vicki. A pleasure.
And anyone who would like to learn more about Expert Insights, our best-selling books, our award-winning magazines, our global broadcast and communities, you can find us at mybookmybiz.com. That's mybookmybiz.com. And everyone have a wonderful week.